What is going on, everybody? Mike here from the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And what I did was I went team by team today, talking about all the stuff about spring training leading up into the season, things we need to be watching for, things we have seen. And it's a long episode. I also touched on my main event team. For those who aren't aware, main event, 5x5, roto, no trades, fab, so there's free agency, through the NFBC. So broke that down, discussed that at the very end. So if you're interested in that, just skip to the end. But otherwise, hope you enjoy. It's a long episode, but it's a great primer for the season. But before we get started, we have a word from our sponsor, Prediction Strike. Do you wish you could have had stock in guys like Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Sandy Alcantara is up 149% over the last year, and investors are making a killing. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. Don't just draft your favorite players, start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code GTE, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performance and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Sign up with promo code GTE to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more.
And they're walking him with the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here! Second deck walk off.
Let's try this again. Now we are live. It should be on YouTube as well. I apologize for the inconvenience. We're going to dive right into all 30 teams today, as well as talk about my main event at the very end. We're going to discuss the lineup trends, some injuries, some last minute changes and call-ups and send downs, et cetera, for each team. We're going to go team by team on roster resource to do so. So let's dive right in now that we're good to go. Let's dive right in. Let's talk about the Braves here. The Braves. You have Acuña at the top. That should be expected. But see, they have Ozuna plugged in here at DH. I don't know his role is going to be the everyday DH. They have other players that are going to need rest. They're also gonna. They also have players like Darno who can get in there at times. Hilliard, if they really want to stream a lefty over a righty, if they want to play matchups. Ozuna had a really strong spring. He's coming off a year where his power metrics were still there. But ultimately, I don't know his role. It could be weak side platoon paired with a little bit of playing time versus righties. I do think he'll play more DH than not to start the year. But then beyond that, I don't know if Eddie Rosario can hold him back at this point, if they really feel intent on streaming the two of them. So overall, I do really like Ozuna for the most part because of where he's going in drafts as a cheap power source, but I don't trust it. And honestly, I don't know why Sean Murphy's batting 7th, the coin roster resource. Murphy should be batting cleanup if spring training lineups were any indication, because spring training lineups, I like to think they tell us a little something, and that's not always the case. I mean, that's usually the case. Sorry, I'm trying to delete the last one on Twitter because Twitter is where I posted it. All right, let's get back to it. So like I said, this lineup's pretty much set in stone, though. You know Rosario is going to start off the season batting at bottom of the third of the lineup. So ultimately, I would look at Murphy slotting 4th, Ozuna slotting down a little bit. Again, if the spring training lineups do hold true. Because what I will do is pull up the Braves spring training lineups real quick because I have the capabilities of doing so. And if you look, Control F on Murphy, and this is that spring training lineup chart I do for the Patreon, you can see Murphy has only been batting 4th minus one lineup. And this is the one lineup that I guess they are basing their assessment on. But this is also a lineup that had Hilliard batting ahead of Murphy. And I don't believe one lineup should be what we should expect. And I believe yesterday's lineup also had Murphy batting. I don't even have it on here, but let's go look at the yesterday's lineup. Yes, Murphy was batting 4th yesterday and they didn't even have Ozuna here. That's what I'm getting at with the Braves. I think Murphy's going to be batting in the middle of the lineup. I do think Ozuna's going to factor. I just don't know how they're going to do it because Ozuna's glove isn't great. He did come into the season with an idea of getting the arm with strengthening his arm, but it doesn't mean it's going to lead to actually like good things in the outfield. So we have to wait and see. We're entering the year wait and see mode with Ozuna, but this lineup right that we saw yesterday should be expected for the most part. Arcia is going to play every day, so if you need some cheap NL only type of at bats, and no, Matt, you did not miss the A's lineup yet. I'm starting with the NL. We're going division by division, but the A's lineup is ugly as hell. So I don't know how far we're going to go. I have a question here: are these players strictly in platoon? Winker, Bellinger, Cassis, and Friedel. I don't think so. Actually, entering the year, I would have said yes to Cassis if. But Dahlbeck was sent down, so now I'm not sold that he's in a strict platoon. Friedel, they don't have enough options there to platoon everyone in the outfield, so Friedel might be in one, but I don't know if it's going to be strict. Bellinger, I think they're going to want to see what they got there. They have, I mean, unless they plan on sitting him for like a Patrick Wisdom type, but even Wisdom, I mean, they sent down what's his face, Morel, who would have been the main guy I figured would have platooned in center. I'll get to the Cubs. We'll talk about it. And Winker, he's the most likely to platoon because they actually have depth there to platoon players, and they like to platoon players there in Milwaukee. So those, we'll get to that lineup for sure. But yeah, anyway, wouldn't say we've been missing it. What did I miss there, Bloomfield? But anyway, yeah, so I appreciate the comments rolling in. So let's move on to, so again, I'm not really going to touch on pitching stuff here, mostly focusing on what I know the best, and that is going to be the lineup stuff. So let's go ahead and get back to this screen. Share this tab instead. StreamYard is not my forte. I usually use OBS, but the streaming quality was crap today. So let's go to the Marlins as they load. So the Marlins are very interesting. I have a tough read on the situation because it's such a mess. I do see this top four playing out with Arias, Chisholm, Soler, Cooper batting 1, 2, 3, and 4 in this lineup. That is not a question at this point. That is almost a certainty, and that should be almost on a regular basis. I know it's lefty lefty, righty righty, so maybe they flip-flop these two, which we have seen that happen. If they want to go lefty righty, because then there's a long run of righties here. But Garcia has been bad, not only just last year, but spring he's hitting like under 200 as well. I don't know how long Avisail Garcia's leash is going to be. Cooper should have a pretty decent leash batting in the middle of this lineup, and while not only batting in the middle of the lineup, but should be playing most days. People are concerned about his playing time. I think between first base and DH, he's going to play most days, even though they kept Yuli Gurriel. Jesus Sanchez is there, Brian De La Cruz. I don't think De La Cruz will play over Sanchez most days, but that's the thing. It's getting kind of crowded because they kept a bunch of outfielders, and they kept a bunch, and they have Yuli Gurriel just to add into the mix of DH and first base, where I'm pointing at these two here, Soler and Cooper, because Gurriel will eat into that playing time. Sanchez and De La Cruz, the reason why I think they kept both is I'm really questioning how long the leash is for Garcia. I know they paid him, but paid for the Marlins isn't exactly a big thing. I think the Marlins are going to try to showcase him. So if Garcia can't get going early on, I don't know if he gets benched as quickly as he might deserve to be. And then that just puts a squeeze on everything. I don't think De La Cruz is set for regular playing time or Sanchez. So with that said, I think it's going to be tough to start either one with confidence to start the year. Sanchez being a bench bat anyway for most teams or a free agent type of pickup. So I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's really going to hurt anyone just to sit on Sanchez and see. Well, it might hurt Sanchez if you sit on him. But Sanchez is a guy that you should be watching for, because if he, as a lefty, can get that strong side platoon, there's appeal there. There's intrigue there, because now you're getting a guy playing often, especially in leagues that you can get him at. And with power being the, you know, the stolen bases of old in fantasy, he could be a difference maker is a strong word, but he could be, considering where you're getting him or off the free agency, could be a difference maker in that aspect. Got some questions here I'll get to. Larnick or Gallo get more playing time in the outfield? So starting off the year, they're both going to play plenty, Eric. And again, we're going to get to every team, but I'll answer your question real quick. That because of injuries, they're both going to play a lot to start the year. I think Gallo might edge him out because of defensive purposes overall, but it could just play itself out given the injuries opening up playing time for both this year. I do like Larnick, though, more from a fantasy perspective. Simeone, you're such a sweetheart, asking why everyone's watching this, because they value my opinion more than I value my own opinion. No, someone called me the king of spring. I'm going to coin that term. I mean, it sounds cocky, but I really thought it was hilarious. So can you recall a time when all the Cubs outfielders were undrafted for the most part, but all are intriguing pickups? Oh, clubs. Sorry. Friedel, Fraley, Benson, Myers. How do you rank them in a 5x5? So I rank Myers ahead of them because I think Myers' playing time is the clearest. And then from there, I think it's Fraley, Benson, Friedel. I think Friedel probably plays more than Benson. I'm just a bias towards Benson. I really like Benson. So Friedel probably ahead of Benson is the safe bet. I think I think Benson's going to have to earn his playing time. But I think Friedel's the most likely to lose the playing time to Benson if anyone was to lose playing time to Benson. So I like Benson more than Friedel, but Friedel ahead of Benson is going to be the consensus and the safe play. And I actually really like Friedel. I like all these pieces. I was up till 2:30 in the morning. Yes, I was. Anyway, so let's move on. So the Marlins are just a mess outside of Cooper, which I saw you, Ryan, that you mentioned you like Cooper there. I think he's just a safe, solid source of RBI, 18, 20-ish home runs. Projections probably have him around there. He's just quietly good. You know, he's going to hit for good average. He's almost like a poor man's Ty France if he could just stay healthy. That's really how you should put it. Like if you want some batting average help, a little bit of pop, some RBI help, he is a poor man's Ty France. Just he can't stay healthy to put up that type of Ty France season. So let's go ahead and move on to the Mets, which the Mets are cut and dry as well. They cut Brett Beatty, but I think Beatty's going to be up sooner than later. So there's not really much there for that. Escobar, whatever. Omar Narvaez, whatever. Mark Canha is going to play just about every day. Tommy Pham is interesting in NL-only leagues because I think Pham takes that rough role in terms of playing the short side platoon while also getting some fourth outfielder work. And, you know, this outfield, I just mentioned a few names, not going to be healthy all season long. Pham can slot right in. I don't know. He is being slept on, actually. So Friedel, someone commented in the I don't speak the language of your name. Friedel has a 267, 354, 533 slash line with 8 home runs, 2 stolen bases when he was called up in August last year. It was weird. He had like a weird slash line because he was actually unlucky towards the end. I remember looking it up. He was unlucky towards the end in terms of bad BABIP luck, bad batting average luck. I think people just don't trust him to hold the playing time. I like Friedel. I like all the Reds guys. That's the thing. So when I say I like Benson more, it's because I'm betting on the flashy skill set more. But ultimately, I like all these guys, and I have shares of all of them across my teams. So the Reds guys, and you brought up the bad BABIP. Yeah, the BABIP, he actually had bad BABIP luck. I think that'll improve. Anyway, back to the Mets. Escobar, again, not a guy I want long-term. I think Brett Beatty comes up sooner than later. He's the guy that I would actually prefer to have and let Escobar. And unless Escobar continues, I mean, he had a scorching hot September. I have a hard time believing that's going to carry over, though, after 5 months of mediocrity. I know he dealt with some, I believe, lingering issues, injuries and such in the beginning of the year. But solid team. It's hard to really nitpick, and there's not really much to break down here. So we'll move on to the Nationals, where there's so much to talk about because there's so much bad. So Lane Thomas should start the year leading off. And the funny part is Dom Smith. You know, we all are still dreaming on Dom Smith after that 2020 breakout in that, you know, shortened season. He's going to be batting second. I think that's actually going to hold true entering the year. Don't know how long it holds beyond, you know, a little bit. But CJ Abrams this offseason has been putrid. I don't think he's going to hit himself up anytime soon. Consider he's going to take some time to develop. I do think Abrams still has a fantasy viable skill set. Even batting at the bottom of the lineup, we could see some solid speed production, but it could be a one category type of thing. So be aware that he could sink you in the other categories as a 8 spot hitter, with stolen bases being the primary source of his interest and his fantasy goodness, I should say. Luis Garcia is a favorite of mine. Batting 6th or 7th should be about right in this lineup. And that's a decent spot, not great. I mean, this lineup's not going to turn over as much as others, so he's still going to get less plate appearances than your average 6th or 7th spot hitter. But if you look, putting him 6th allows them to do that lefty-righty thing all the way through the lineup if that's what they want to do. We saw Garcia, and, you know, Thomas has struggled against righties in the past, Lane Thomas, so his leadoff, and we've seen him dip down in the lineup against righties in the past, so if he can't come out the gates swinging against righties, maybe Garcia as a lefty can push for some leadoff spot, some leadoff run sooner than later as well against righties. It's going to be on Garcia and Abrams. The manager's already said that Garcia and Abrams are going to have to hit their way up essentially and earn it. But look at them: Candelario, Dickerson, Joey Meneses. We'll talk about him in a second. Dominic Smith. Those aren't exactly world beaters. Those aren't exactly guys like that should hold them back. So at the end of the day, I do think Garcia and Abrams will move up. It's just a matter of if they perform. Meneses is an interesting guy. I'm not in on him. I am afraid of missing out. I mean, I think the two flashy home runs he hit, I believe it was for Mexico during WBC, was what caught everyone's attention. But then he came back and was a pumpkin for spring. What were his stats? 1 second. I will pull those up because his stats and spring stats don't matter. I'll be honest with you. They don't. But I do like to see if a player that finishes hot starts spring good, like kind of carries that momentum over. And yeah, people forget Meneses is like a 30-year-old rookie. Like he's far from a sure thing. And in spring, a 4.36 OPS, a sub 200 batting average. Granted, we're talking 39 plate appearances, but it's still one of those things where it has my attention just because I don't buy into these types of players. I mean, Schwindel is the lazy comp, but it's the most notable recent comp in terms of a late career breakout randomly for like a month or two in a season and then to nothing. Nesses has the same type of potential for that to happen because there's a reason why he was 30 years old before he made his debut is how I look at it. Some decent numbers in the minors, so he's not like a nobody, but at the end of the day, I don't trust it, so I'm not buying it. Alex Call for you NL-only players. He's going to be the fourth outfielder. We've seen Victor Robles not only struggle with injury, but performance. Not saying that Call is going to make a great center fielder, but Lane Thomas can play center field. And Call could easily, not only will he be a weak side platoon mate between Corey Dickerson and others, but he will also factor into the outfield mix as a whole as a fourth outfielder. But path to playing time for Alex Call is there and should be noted just for deeper leagues because, you know, sometimes you just need plate appearances and he's kind of that guy. All right, the next roster we're going to is the Phillies. We're finishing off with the Phillies. And the Phillies here are decimated by injury. And it's unfortunate. It's rather unfortunate. You know, Hoskins out for the year with the ACL. So Derek Hall's going to get some first base run. In spring, he has like a 15% strikeout rate. And the strikeout issues were the big issue for Hall last year when he came up. But the power has always been legitimate. And there's never been a question about the power. So ultimately, if you want a big power bat, somebody who can hit 30, if he hit 30 home runs because of the run he's going to get this year, now that he's going to get full, probably close to 500 plate appearances or more, if he can just not suck completely, he has 30 home runs. Now he can hit 230 in the process. But if you're looking for a big bopper at the end of drafts, look no further than Derek Hall. And batting fourth or fifth, like in that lineup, is very doable considering, again, if they value that power in the middle of the lineup and the lefty bat because it allows them to go, again, righty-lefty-righty-lefty, which is a trend you'll see lineups be. Righty-lefty-righty-lefty all the way down. So ultimately, Derek Hall, he's a guy that I really like late in drafts for power, but a guy that I think can move his way up the lineup that we saw move up the lineup last year was Alec Bohm. I'm going to check his stats out real quick because Bohm was a guy that this spring put on some, you know, muscle, all that didn't matter. But I was curious to see how the power production would work because we know Bohm. One thing we know about Bohm is he has a hit tool, a really good one at that. And this spring he has an 841 OPS. He has 8 extra base hits out of his 13. That could be something. It could be nothing, but it's not. I don't think it's nothing because we know Bohm to be a good hitter. And if he can turn some of those extra base hits, some of those fly balls into home runs with that added added power he intended on, at least what I would think you put muscle on for. If you put that 10 to 15 pounds of muscle on and you put it to work, I think that's worth monitoring. Now, you know what you're getting there. You know Bohm's going to give you like a 270 batting average with like 15 home runs and just be a solid producer. But if he's hitting 270-ish and that 15 home runs turns into 20 to 25, you're getting a little bump there without having to pay the price for that bump. So draft him for his floor, or if you draft him for his floor, be happy. You kind of know what you're getting. But the fact that there is a potential for power gain here for Alec Bohm is intriguing and something worth remembering and keeping an eye on early in the year. That's what we're doing here. And it goes back to, it's just a reminder that stats don't matter, but when you're looking for a player to do something, like you just take a look at the stats and see what they're doing and then you're watching to see if it carries over. The stats don't necessarily mean it's going to. It's just one of those things where it's like, all right, this is encouraging. You see it in real time in a small sample. Maybe he can just, again, carry it over. That's all I care about. Now, the last guy here I'm going to mention is Edmundo Sosa. Because talk about big springs, he had one. And he's going to play against lefties at the very least. But one injury to a Bryson Stott, he played all over the field this spring too. One injury to Brandon Marsh, probably. I don't know about center field, but you get my point. Edmundo Sosa could easily work his way up the lineup, and it wouldn't surprise or shouldn't surprise anybody in the process. Somebody asks, worst lineup, A's or Nats? I actually think the Nats are worse. Maybe I just have some intrigue and interest in the A's. I really like the A's. Because of deeper leagues, though, not because they're actually good. There's some intriguing pieces to that lineup, whereas the Nationals, outside of one player, I have no real interest. And then that one player being Luis Garcia, one of my guys this year that I really like, because there's power, speed, and former top prospect, a lot of youth there. So, yeah, this team, Amundo Sosa's guy, just keep an eye on him, because if he turns into a bigger role, can carry over some of what we're seeing in spring, there is some offensive fantasy juice there. Let's actually pull up his line real quick before we move on. He has, 4 home runs, 2 stolen bases, batting 364 with a 1126 OPS. So, I mean, again, it's spring training, but that's the type of thing you see. Okay, that jumps off the page. So maybe maybe that will as well. Maybe he can as well in season. So we're moving over to the NL. Let's get to the Brewers. Here we go. So everyone likes everyone. We talked about the Brewers a little bit earlier, but so they show everyone platooning. And the problem is with this team, they can make it happen. Luke Voit did sign a 1-year deal, so he is going to be on the team now. I don't know if he's going to strictly platoon, though. I think I could see him, but at the end of the day, I'm not seeing a clear spot for him not to strictly platoon. So it'll be interesting to see how Luke Voit's playing time plays out, but he earned a spot on this roster to say the least. Plus, you know, Jesse Winker isn't going to stay healthy. There's a clear path to playing time there against lefties at the very least, and one injury to a Jesse Winker or Rowdy Tellez, and he is the next man up. My boy, my guy on this team, Bryce Terang, guy I've been betting on. I just drafted him again last night. I drafted him in my main. He made the team, and the other two, you know, Joey Weimer and Sal Frelick, I believe. Those guys are going to be up sooner than later, so add those guys to your watch list. If you're in deeper leagues, Bryce Terang should be rostered, but if he's not, either change that or put him on your watch list. He's a guy with very Gene Segura-ish. I end up looking at his stats, and someone asked me him or Gene Segura, and I'm like, Terang and Segura are kind of the same guy. The difference is Segura being the safer bet, you know, playing tight, he's going to hit higher in the lineup, so he gets more plate appearances, worse ballpark. But Terang, he has the speed, he has the batting average and on-base ability. Can Terang get some of that power boost from that park is kind of where I'm betting on it. I think 10 to 12 home runs is fair. 15-15 season is probably like best case scenario. But if he went 10-20, that also can happen because Terang, what he was, I believe he was like 32 for 34 in the base pass last year in the minors. It's a skill of his. He can run. Like stolen bases are a skill. He's an efficient base runner. The new rules play to his favor. If he hits 8 home runs, that's also an outcome. But again, 20 stolen bases is not out of the range of possibility. But if you expect like a 10-10 or 10-15 type of year from him and you get anything else, 10-12, whatever it is, Terang is kind of giving, I think he can give you that. And that's like a floor. I think he's a higher floor type. Again, Segura feels like a good comp here, and you don't have to pay the price of Segura. And Terang, shortstop eligible, should gain second base eligibility. Segura, speaking of Segura, because we passed the Marlins already, he's going to bat like 6 in the lineup, whatever, but he's going to gain third base, so know that. I'm trying to think. I should have mentioned some eligibility as we went along here. I'll try to remember that as we go. Brian Anderson, sneaky good spring this year. A solid player. Nothing special, nothing flashy, but you know what you're getting there with Anderson, and there's playing time there. He's going to play right field to start the year after they sent down all those other guys. And while Tyrone Taylor is recovering, so it might be a short-term thing. But for the short term, you know you're getting some decent stats. Brian Anderson is interesting and useful. Jesse Winker, I believe Jesse Winker was having a decent spring. I'm going to look that up real quick because Winker, the reason why I bring that up and even mention is you want to see him healthy. You know, he came into the spring, wasn't exactly healthy. No, he didn't. So last I looked, he had a decent spring, but then he since sucked. 6.325 OPS, pretty much, 200 batting average. Twice as many walks, 6, compared to strikeouts, 3. So Winker still showing the on-base potential. But if he doesn't get going early on, maybe Luke Voit can get some play appearances over him as we see Winker struggle. Garrett Mitchell, he's another guy that sneaky pop. He entered the year last year, the home runs weren't there, they haven't been in the minors, but what caught my attention was he increased that ground ball rate so much when he came up. It just didn't turn into power, it just never turned into those home runs. But I think he was like a 20% ground ball rate. It was stupid low, and we know the speed's there, we know the batting average, we know the hit tool's there for Garrett Mitchell. I think Mitchell could surprise us with some power. 4 home runs this spring, 6 extra base hits out of his 10 hits. 60% of his hits have been extra base hits this spring. And I take notice of that because we saw him, and maybe it might be in part due to selling out for power, but he still has a 300 batting average. So the hit tool isn't going anywhere. I think that's still a skill. I think there could be sneaky double-digit power here that we weren't exactly expecting. And that ballpark will play to that. So seeing that ground ball rate and fly ball rate when he came up late last year for that cup of coffee, or for that not cup of coffee, it was an actual run. And I think there's some power there, some hidden power we might see from Garrett Mitchell this year. So if you didn't draft him for power, maybe you'll get a little extra home runs, but you know the speed's there, you know the batting average should be there. Let's move on to, is it going to be the Cardinals? Oh, well, this one's fun. Jordan Walker made the team. Carlson, the coach, came out and said that he's going to be a defensive replacement for guys like Jordan Walker. So Walker might lose the occasional plate appearance late in games if that's the case, but ultimately, Walker is going to play every day until he proves he can't, type of thing. If he gets sent down, it wouldn't be a surprise just because rookies struggle. He's a stash if he gets sent down, but he's breaking camp with the team and should bat in the bottom third of the lineup. Gorman suddenly becomes more intriguing because I think Gorman is going to get the strong side of a DH platoon. We saw him kind of act in that manner last year. Same thing with Carlson. We saw Carlson act as a weak side platoon slash switch hitting bat off the bench, which is and a defensive replacement. That's what they talked about utilizing him as in this article I read yesterday. So Carlson, understand that Carlson isn't going to be fantasy relevant anytime soon. That added muscle did not help him from striking out 30% of the time this spring, which that kind of matters when you're trying to make the team as a starter, when you're trying to prove that you belong as an everyday player in a lineup. If you're not performing in ways that they want you to, spring stats suddenly matter. But Gorman, power, strikeout issues, might hit 230, could hit 25 bombs if he plays enough. I just don't know if he's going to play enough. The rest of this lineup, Tyler O'Neill. Let's talk about this. So Brandon Donovan, Lars Nootbaar at the top of the lineup against righties, absolutely going to happen. At least from the looks, it's been like three or four straight lineups we've seen this. Oh, here we go. I don't think Gorman. No, I think they're going to platoon. So someone asked, Eric asked if Gorman and Carlson are going to platoon. I don't think they're going to platoon necessarily in the way that people might think in the outfield. I think it's going to be a DH platoon where Gorman plays DH against righties, maybe gets some second base run. If anybody plays outfield, it's going to be Edmund or Donovan most likely. But they also have Alec Burleson that'll factor in. But regardless, no. Long story short, no. Gorman should not gain eligibility in the outfield. Meanwhile, like say versus lefties, Carlson comes in, plays the outfield. You might have a different person playing DH is all. That's all that is. I don't see Gorman gaining outfield eligibility. Someone said, I'm the man. I appreciate you, David. You're the man for supporting the show. Yes, and I was getting to that. Edmund's going to lead off when facing lefties. Thank you for commenting that. Edmund's going to lead off facing lefties. You're going to have Nootbaar and Donovan batting top two facing righties to start the year from what it looks like. O'Neill's going to bat second against lefties, and it looks like sixth. Otherwise, I think that's appropriate. Maybe I could see O'Neill batting seventh, and they flip-flop Gorman just to get a lefty in there because at that point it's four straight righties. So if O'Neill bats seventh, that wouldn't be too much of a surprise. But ultimately, sixth or seventh for O'Neill against righties, but he's going to play every day. He's going to play center field, and I think he's in for a bounce back year. I think O'Neill can bounce back. It shouldn't surprise anybody if he does. Again, it goes back to the bench stuff. Burleson's interesting if there's an injury, fourth outfield type. Yepez got sent down, obviously, but if he comes up, he's a DH type. We know he can hit, but he hasn't really put it together for other than like short spurts here and there. Let's talk eligibility here. I just remembered Walker's going to gain outfield, obviously. And I don't know about anybody else here. So that's about it. Cubs. This one was interesting because all spring long, Christopher Morel actually wasn't playing third base, which I was like, all right, cool. I'm off of him anyway. He's not going to have an everyday role. I figured Morel could be a utility type come day one. Morel, last I checked, and we'll see, he was already sent down. But I think he was striking out 40% of the time in spring. And I'm sorry, a 910 OPS, though. And a 269 batting average. I was like, all right, cool. But here's the thing about Morel. He has the tools. No one questioned the tools about Morel. Morel was a solid like contributor, but after that little hot run when he got called up last year, we saw him kind of get put into this weird role of like a couple days a week here, like platoon-ish, not quite. And then ultimately in spring, they obviously want to see what they have in guys like Rios. Morel struck out 42% of the time. So sure, you can have power and speed, but you need to be able to hit the baseball first. And if you're striking out 42% of the time in the against minor league pitching for the most part, because obviously he's facing some major league pitching, I have a hard time believing that suddenly would improve drastically come opening day. So at the end of the day, I really do like, I really never really was in on him, and now he's not draftable. And then it's guys like Edwin Rios become very intriguing because yes, he has some swing and miss in his game, but not to a point where it usually hinders his overall production. Rios should have a more regular role. But I'm still not sure it's even his role at third base and DH. Because you have guys like Patrick Wisdom who has been playing right field, so maybe they can move Wisdom around. But it's almost like a perfect platoon fit. I know Wisdom's pretty much better defensively, so that might factor. But in terms of lefty righty splits, they both strike out a ton. They both hit for a lot of power. They can make a perfect platoon match at third base. But then you have Madrigal, who also got a ton of run at third base this spring. So he's going to factor in. So it might not be so cut and dry as we think. But I think Edwin Rios will get a solid run at least DHing and playing third base against righties as the left-handed bat. And someone asked me here thoughts on Ashcraft. I think he's showing promise. Ashcraft, we're going to get to the Reds here shortly, actually. But Ashcraft is a guy that I don't ever trust. It's just Reds pitching, but ultimately there's upside there. And I think he has some stuff to be interesting. Just know that wins can be an issue. And of course, if he gets Great America Small Parked, that can also be an issue. But ultimately, where he's going in drafts, very little risk. There's reward there. But going back to this, Mastro Boney. Oh man, I think it's Miles Mastrobono. I don't know how to say it. I apologize, but he's going to take that Morel role where he's going to be the util type, I believe. Madrigal's going to factor into the infield. Don't really have much. Terenz, obviously, backup catcher. Well, not even. Where's Yeah, there's Jan Gomes. Terenz can be a catcher for. I'm surprised he's on here. He's not going to be there long. I don't know. Anyway, looking at this lineup, pretty as expected. Horner leading off. Ian Happ third. Trey Mancini's having a nice little spring, and it's good to see him bounce back after that rough second half with Astros. I forgot what it was. There was something that was hindering him, I believe that, but he made a point to correct that in the spring. Bellinger is still Bellinger. Power speed, but will he hit 200 again? There's a likelihood of that. I was watching some of his at-bats this spring, and the high fastball was still getting him. But he is Cody Bellinger, and his strikeout rate was only 15.7% this spring. I think that matters a little bit for him. But he was also, you know, 3 home runs, 1 stolen base, batting 200. Also within the range of outcomes for Cody Bellinger. Eric Hosmer, the fact that he's up over Matt Mervis upsets me, but it is what it is. I don't know. Hosmer has an only appeal. He's going to play. So we can move on to the Pirates, which this team has deep league implications here. You have McCutcheon. I do buy McCutcheon playing DH. They have Choi on the strong side of platoon of Santana, but all spring long, we've seen Santana getting all pretty much all. I know Choi's come back from injury, but we've seen Santana getting all the run with the regulars batting fourth. I haven't seen, where is Choi? Let me see last time Choi hasn't, he started the day before, but Santana was in the lineup also with him. Choi hasn't been starting with the regulars here. Let's look at this. Share this. So you look at this team roster here, and Choi hasn't been starting with the regulars. When he does, you have Santana in him. You have Choi here, Santana's here. Choi here, not all the regulars. When you have all the regulars, like this lineup has a lot of them, pretty much most of them, against the righty. Santana also, I know Choi is obviously the lefty. Weak side platoon for Santana isn't out of the question, but I think Santana opens the year starting as the regular first baseman. And I think that Santana was hindered by the shift a ton after starting 2 or 3 years ago. Still has really good strong power metrics, still has really good plate discipline, elite plate discipline at that, good contact skills. I think Santana could be in for a little bounce back, and he's a very intriguing corner infield option in the reserve rounds, or has been. Swinski, power or bust. We just talked about Bellinger being like a 200 hitter, but can hit for power and speed. I think Swinski could hit. I think he has 30 home run upside, but I don't think he's going to hit the ball enough to get it. Or maybe lacking that swing miss could cause him to not play enough to get there. But ultimately, if you expect 20-25 home runs, that's there. It's just he can hit 220 in the process. But Sawinski is a very intriguing guy. Smith and Jigba, I believe is how you say it, looks like he would be my favorite to make right field. He's been getting a lot of the run there lately. And Jiwon Bae playing second base with Castro. Like, I think Bae is going to play enough around the field to gain some eligibility at second base. He's outfield eligible. I don't know if Castro is going to necessarily hold him back. I don't think he's had a good spring either, actually. And spring stats will matter when you're fighting for position. Yeah, you have Smith and Jigba, who had a really strong spring, and right field for the taking. I think it's his. Yeah, Bae had a rough spring, and so did, I think, where is it? Where is he at? Oh, my goodness. Oh, Castro. Castro, 604 OPS, 20 strikeouts, which ended up being a 34.5% strikeout rate for him. Bae, 22% strikeout rate, with a 547 OPS. Neither one of these guys are relevant outside AL only anyway. Is Yandy an everyday player? Yes, he is. Yandy Diaz will be leading off and playing third base and first base for that team, for the Rays. That's my take on them. Anyway, back to them. So Kutch, very intriguing, should bat third just every day. Farewell Tour, he's going to play as much as he can handle. I think Kutch has 2010 potential. We've seen him do it recently. He still has really good speed. He's going to play every day. I think he's just a solid contributor, and he's kind of just forgotten about in drafts. He's probably going to be a starting outfielder for most five outfield leagues come sooner than later. Other than that, it's just a bunch of mess that nobody really cares about. Brian Hayes is interesting, actually, because so he's same thing with Bohm. He put on power. He put on muscle with the intent of trying to stay healthy and hit for more power this spring. Yesterday, anyway, I tweeted it out just how good he has been this spring, but it's not even how good he's been. It's the fact that he's had 4 home runs and 6 of his 13 hits being extra base hits, over 1,000 OPS for Brian Hayes. Just another thing that we're kind of watching as we enter the season. Can Hayes continue that growth there? Can we see a power outbreak that maybe we never thought was there? Okay, one second. Need some water. I'm going to change over to the new team now. O'Neill Cruz. I mean, I don't know if we should even talk. I'm not talking about the obvious names here. Those guys, O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds, they're going to play. Reds. Let's get to the Reds. So here we go. I don't know why. I don't think Friedel's batting second. I don't think. Votto out. Let's see what they've been doing in the last few lineups. Because Votto was obviously going to be plugged in there. How did they move? They moved Friedel up second once. So I don't know what their plans are. The problem is they've been getting Votto. Let's see, what were they doing before Votto? So before Votto, Stevenson was actually batting second a lot. Will Myers would get some run at batting second. So Stevenson, Friedel did get a couple starts there. It's just hard to say that he will necessarily because they also have Fraley who they like. So we're watching out. But at the end of the day, they could just easily slot him up there, Stevenson up to second, and kind of just let that fall into place. Fraley fourth, Friedel down here somewhere too. But at the end of the day, I really like this lineup as a whole. I'm really in on Jonathan India. I like what I saw this spring. He's making adjustments. He's feeling more comfortable with the plate. India's walking a ton, striking out very little. And power, there's a little bit of power there, definitely some speed, and definitely some batting average. And leading off and gets the player day at Great American Small Park. Love it. Will Benson, a lot of flash, a lot of fantasy juice. There's also swing and miss in his game. So be aware that it could come with a bad batting average, but Benson, starting the year, should have an everyday role, at least on a strong side platoon. But if Fraley, who's known to get injured or struggle, or can struggle, or Friedel struggles, when Votto returns and Myers needs to shift back to the outfield, I still think either A, one of these guys will stay as a fourth outfielder, or B, Benson gets sent down because he has three options. So does Fraley. So they have ways of keeping whoever in lineup performs. So just know that Benson has a lot of power speed upside. Friedel has some power speed. Fraley has some power speed. There's a lot of fantasy goodness here and all very cheap and there's a lot of just overall potential. I don't see why not targeting this lineup. Just again, this is one of the best ballparks to hit in, if not the best ballpark to hit. You want a piece of this lineup, even though it's on paper, it's ugly. For fantasy purposes, it's really, really solid. In terms of, there's not really any interest here. I still hold out hope for Barrero, but I expect him to play very little without injury, even though Kevin Newman offensively shouldn't be. I don't know why they went out and did that. Let's move on to the D-backs. This one was interesting. We saw yesterday that the D-backs haven't been leading off Corbin Carroll like they have been all spring, now that we've seen some regular lineups. That was intriguing to me because I think Carroll will hit his way up sooner than later, but we saw this manager and we saw this team lead off Josh Rojas plenty last year. Rojas could start the year leading off, at least in a platoon. Could be a strong side platoon leading off, but nevertheless, he could be leading off. McCarthy batting in the bottom third of the lineup, I think that's more likely than where they have him slotted batting third. We've seen McCarthy have one good half of baseball and everyone assumed he'd just be that guy. I'm not sold on it. And McCarthy's having a really bad spring. So that's just some bias kicking in there. I'm talking like a sub 500 OPS, sub 200 batting average last I looked. Thomas should play at least strong side platoon, but his glove is really good. And they talk about how good his glove is. But if they care about the offensive production, we saw Carroll play center field yesterday, so I think they'll trust Carroll with that speed and range to cover a center if necessary. And believe it or not, McCarthy's best defensive metrics last year came at center. So ultimately, if they need to move on from Thomas, they can, but it's still going to be iffy. Lourdes Gurriel, see, they have him here. I think Lourdes Gurriel bats third. Strong plate discipline, strong batting average floor. There is some pop there people forget about because he had such a down year in power. But he's showing off some solid pop in spring, and I think he can definitely get back to being a decent hitter. So Lourdes Gurriel is not somebody we should be sleeping on too much there. Nick Ahmed's going to play every day. Gabriel Moreno, let's talk about it real quick. I see a lot of Keibert Ruiz in him, and that's not a bad thing. And I think that's where he's going, or where he's been going in drafts. Is there some raw power upside? Absolutely. I think he has a 50-grade raw power. But we haven't seen that translate to game power, and that is what counts. So if Moreno hits 10 home runs, nobody should be surprised. But if he hits 20, that's also within the realm of possibilities. I'm just not banking on that. I think, like I said, I think it's more of a Keibert Ruiz type of production. Strong floor, good batting average, won't hurt you, but isn't the league winner that some people might think he is just because he's that top prospect that was traded for and has a clear path of playing time now that Carson Kelly has that broken forearm. Longoria should factor, Luis should factor against lefties, but it's hard to say that. I'm sure, again, they'll play in and out as well for depth purposes, days off, etc. But I don't see a regular role for those guys at all to start the year. And so if Carroll bats fifth, a little less plate appearances, but hitting his way up. I think as long as if he starts off strong, there's no reason why he wouldn't move up. Same with McCarthy. If he does shake off this bad spring training, starts off, hits the ground running, they're gonna move pieces as they perform. So I wouldn't stick to like watching this lineup too hard, too much because they also last year tend to move players around in general. So just be aware though. And McCarthy starting off 6th, 7th, 8th in the lineup will hurt his production though, of course. So early in the year, maybe he's a buy low if you're in trade leagues, but I'm just not in on him. There's that. Duvall versus Larnick. That's tough. If you're looking long term, I think Duvall plays more. I do like Larnick more if I had to pick between the two, at least for the short term. But if you're looking for a long term fix, I do think Adam Duvall would be your play. I preferred Larnick though. I just don't know if Larnick will have a role come when everyone returns. Dodgers, let's move over to the Dodgers. Miguel Vargas is going to gain second base eligibility. We'll get that out of the way. He's going to play just about every day, bat towards the bottom third of the lineup. I don't think Thomas is an everyday player. They have him here. They don't even have him here platooning. I think they don't even have Outman here platooning. What do they think? They called Outman up with two. They kept Hayward and kept Outman, who had two options. You think they kept him up not to play him? Sorry, Ross Resource. You do a great job giving me a list of names, but I'm going to argue with you. James Outman's going to play center field, I think, on a strong side platoon. That's my opinion. And I think he bats right around here in the lineup as well, 6th, 7th, 8th. You have Betts, who's going to gain some. I think he's going to play enough second base. They mentioned about 20 games, so we'll see. I think by that's going to be with Vargas getting days off. It's not going to be because Vargas, unless Vargas completely struggles. But this lineup should be about what you expect. JD Martinez batting in the middle somewhere. Max Muncy, Will Smith, all right there. David Peralta is going to be a strong side platoon guy as well. Yeah, so Chris Taylor, I'm not in on him. I think he plays a little bit of versus righties. He'll give Miguel Vargas some days off at shortstop, and he's going to be a super util type. So Taylor will play as needed, but the strikeout issues are there even in spring. And he's going to be a weak side platoon guy. I think Peralta, Outman, pick your poison. He's going to weak side platoon. I don't understand how Jason Hayward made this team. Maybe it was as a favor to Freddie Freeman, who really likes him and wanted him. I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me. But yes, this team pretty cut and dry. We can move on from them as well. Go to I'm already like, Giants. A player no one's really talking about that they should be more in on is Lamont Wade Jr. Leading off, should play first base, has first base outfield eligibility. That's that. Estrada, I think he'll bat towards the top lineup, but we did see him slide down recently in spring against righties, which is also a possible outcome given the fact that they have like 30 lefties. They can easily and then when Haniger returns, they have to figure that out. Conforto could bat second, could bat fourth, could bat fifth. It wouldn't surprise me. But Jock, Conforto, Haniger, Estrada, Wade should be top five in some way, shape, or form most days. And then you have Platoon City incoming if they can. Obviously, the problem is, again, they have so many lefties. They don't have enough righties in the outfield. But because of how they like to utilize platoons, a guy like Bryce Johnson, if he makes his team, assuming he is, he's a lefty or he's a switch hitter, he could easily platoon as a righty with these guys. Wilmer Flores will factor. JD Davis, we know, will factor in at first base and third base. They've actually been playing JD Davis at first base a lot this spring, but maybe they put him at third base, VR to first base, whatever. I mean, VR's gloves better at third base. Ultimately, you know what you're getting here. You're getting a bunch of platoon situations, but a bunch of solid fantasy contributors. And I'd be surprised. I think Jock would platoon over Conforto, at least initially, just because of how strict they were with Jock's platoon last year. Maybe they want to see if Conforto can come back and not be a complete waste against lefties. Whereas I feel like they already feel that way against with Jock. Blake Sable, all the hype is around him. He made the team, Rule 5 pick. Great spring. The big thing about him, catcher eligibility. I think Sable can be viable as a catcher 2 in leagues. I drafted him last night as a catcher 2. And I think that's very within the realm of possibility. And he could play outfield. So the thing is he's backup catching depth here. He can also play the outfield. He's expected to play both. And if he can actually pick up where he left off in spring, he's going to play more times than not. And they have him slotted in at DH. I think he'll factor in a DH. I don't think necessarily he'll get it every day. But again, as a lefty, it favors them if they want to play platoons, which the Giants are known to do. So Blake Sable's a guy you need to know about for sure. I'm slowing down here. We have 18 more teams, 17 more teams. This is how I do my articles. I get really hyped, really into it, and I'm dead by now. Bogaerts leading off, not going to happen. Maybe to start the year, though, I will give him that. Maybe to start the year because we saw Bogaerts begin spring training leading off. But we also seen Trent Grisham getting a lot of run against righties leading off. So we could see maybe Grisham, who has led off in the past against righties plenty, see Grisham lead off against righties until Fernando Tatis Jr. returns. And then Bogaerts gets lefties because Bogaerts' numbers against lefties are really strong for his career. But Bogaerts will be batting cleanup more times than not. Carpenter. See, to start the year, I don't see David Dahl. I don't see them carrying a bench DH. I think Nelson Cruz is going to DH to start the year. They've been playing Carpenter at first base all spring. Carpenter plays first base, Cronenworth the second, Kim to right field was my argument. But if they don't want to do that, then yes, something's going to have to give between these two, and Cruz could be screwed. Dahl has not been good. I don't know. Is Dahl really going to be a better outfielder than Kim, who I know Kim hasn't played the outfield in a little bit, but Kim can play the outfield is my understanding. So I don't know if I'm suddenly buying into Cruz not DHing. I don't know. And then we've seen Carpenter play left field too. Not saying he should, or right field, sorry. We've seen Carpenter play the outfield though. Not saying he should play the outfield at 37 years old, but I don't think that they want to carry two DH bats. It just seems like a waste of space. And then speaking of catchers, Nola was terrible last year. Nola was absolutely horrendous as a catcher. And offensively, he had like an 88 WRC plus, sub 100, sub average. He's a below average player in general. He's not good. Campusano, top prospect, put on some serious bulk this year. I think he has like 4 or 5 home runs. Maybe, again, this is where my bias comes in here with Campusano. But the dude was so much better than Nola. Nola is having a good spring. I'll give him that. I didn't even look at Nola's spring numbers because I don't care. But I'd be surprised if Nola plays a large amount over Campusano. Why would you bring up one of your top prospects and a better catcher, probably most likely a better fielding catcher at this point too, to sit him in favor of Nola? Nola will play. I believe Nola has splits too that like lend him to being a good against lefties. So maybe we see him get those lefties plus. I know they're both righties. It doesn't really matter there, but I don't know. I have a hard time believing that they're going to play Nola long. And if they do play Nola over Campusano, I don't see it being a long-term thing. So Campusano is a guy I really like. Really, really like this spring. I'm looking for his numbers. It's really bothering me. There they are. Yeah. Oh, 1,022 OPS, 5 walks, 6 strikeouts, and 3 home runs in his 8 hits. So the power's been there. And if you look, there's some pictures circulating. He's like juiced up. He pretty much doubled the size from 2020 to now. So the power isn't going to be on accident, which is interesting. If he can hit for more power than we maybe anticipated. Otherwise, obviously no interest in Lindor. Tatis comes back. And everything kind of falls into place. When Tatis comes back, I figure Tatis will come back, and that's when Cruz and Carpenter something's going to have to give. I'm really surprised that David Dahl, really? I don't know. What has Dahl done this? Last I looked, he's having okay. He got his batting average up to 288. He was really bad. He has a 34.5 strikeout percentage, though. But I guess if they want to, maybe his glove in right field obviously going to be better than Carpenter. Maybe they value that. I'm just surprised that they're not going to try out Kim in the right field. Just to get Cruz and Carpenter. I'm harping on this way more than anybody cares about. Let's move on to the Rockies, I guess. They signed Mike Moustakas to get in the way because why wouldn't they? I don't know if they're going to utilize him as a strong side platoon to Elias Montero. I haven't seen any real reports on that. Somebody mentioned to me yesterday that Montero was named the starter. So I'm looking up to see if there's anything about that. But I haven't seen any news on that situation. And I know they have Montero as the starter here at their base. And Moustakas, I hope this is what they do. This is what they should do. But I don't trust it, especially with the way that they think that they want to get cute with the platoons. Moustakas and Montero both had strong springs. We'll see how this plays out sooner than later, I hope. But ultimately, I do like Montero as a power source. And if the Rockies do the right thing here, they let the young kid carry over the hot spring start. And if you look at today's lineup, it looks opening day-ish. And Montero is in against a righty in Freddy Peralta over Moustakas. So I really like Montero here, especially if he can just keep that spot. There's no reason why they wouldn't let him run with it if he holds. It's going to be on him, I guess. But Moustakas, just know that he's there and can factor and screw things up here. Especially if they won't play platoons, they could. They shouldn't. Castro could factor in because I don't know what's up with Profar. I haven't seen a thing about Profar. They signed him and went dark. If anybody watching knows what happened with Profar, please let me know. But he's supposed to be playing and he's supposed to be starting and leading off. I haven't seen a single update about him. And I haven't looked this morning. So we will look this morning. Oh, visa issues. And he will join the Rockies in time for opening day. That was today at 2:50. Oh, so it happened while we were streaming, basically. Good. So we got that answer. Profar will be leading off most likely for this team. So a guy like Castro, who made the team, will be factoring in on days off and stuff like that. But when Randall Grichuk returns, there's no room for someone. Something's going to have to give. Dazzle probably ends up being the fourth outfielder. Castro gets sent down, or he has two options. So we'll see. We can move on from the Rockies. I don't think. Oh, McMahon's going to gain second base eligibility. That's worth mentioning. We can move on from there, though. Oh, Tovar. Don't forget Tovar. He's going to play. He's going to start. and break camp as a starting shortstop. Batting ninth, speed first, a little bit of power, nothing crazy. Let's go to the Blue Jays, shall we? This team is, you can write this team in pen for the most part. It will be interesting to see what they do with Danny Jansen, but Brandon Belt was pretty much told, like, hey, you're going to play as much as you can handle, which in my thought process is he's going to get the righties, so platoon is coming his way, but he should be the strong side. And I think he bats, I think this between fourth and sixth is right. He's been batting cleanup all spring, so I could see, I see Belt and Varsho flip-flopping, but regardless, I think these two lefties are going to slot right here. The top of the lineup, Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero is going to be the top three most days, with Chapman, by no fault of his own, sliding all the way down to ninth. I don't trust Whit Merrifield to last long term as a second baseman. I think Santiago Espinal can factor in, and they have a guy in Addison Barger that was supposed to break camp, did not, and he's going to need to find a way to make his way into the lineup. I don't think he plays second base. I know he plays shortstop and he plays in third base and left field, I believe, in spring, but Barger could push his way up sooner than later, which maybe they get him some second base reps in the minors just to get him comfortable with it. Because if you can play shortstop, if you can play third base, I think you can handle learning second base. And having the range of a shortstop at second base with the new shift rules could be beneficial. And he's a lefty bat as well. But Merrifield had a strong run to end last year. I just don't know how much of a run he's going to have come, if he has another slow start to begin this year. And they have other options. Biggio is not another option, but he's on the, but he is another option, so to speak. He's going to play two games a week, maybe three, fill in via injury, maybe some left-handed at-bats late in game as a if they want to get him in against a righty over Merrifield type of thing. But Espinal could easily factor in the second base sooner or later, and they mentioned he's going to factor in the second base, so he's not going to be in a strict platoon. I just saw your comment here, Fox. Thanks for I appreciate it. I just figured it out too. I think we figured it out at the same time, or you dropped it in there. But Kevin Kiermaier, another name to just know he's going to play, but the glove will keep him in there. Probably platoon though. We can nothing really here to mention. I'm trying to think again. It's just about Danny Jansen. I think Jansen will play enough to be a solid catcher too. I know he was going right around that fringe catcher one spot. I think he has the potential to be really good even with a limited amount of plate appearances. And that catcher, it's all about quality over quantity for the most part anyway. So if you can give me a quality per plate appearance catcher, I'll take that over most of the quantity guys he's going around anyway. The Orioles, which you see is what you got right here at the top. I think this is the top four: Mullins, Rushman, Santander, and Mountcastle. Mountcastle, perfect situation last year, still only put 22 home runs up. I think he can hit 25, maybe 30, but that ballpark really hinders his potential there. And we saw it last year. Everything went right, had over 600 plate appearances, still only hit 22 home runs. So it was with a little bit of a down second half, though. So that's why I'm saying 25 to 30 is within the range of outcomes and possibilities, but 30 is really tough with that ballpark now. Rushman batting second, he's going to DH as well. So I think Rushman's going to have more plate appearances than your average catcher. That's going to help vault his high floor to give him a little bit more of a ceiling than your average catcher going there. But yes, I think Rutschman batting second most of the time is going to happen. And I do think that adds to his value because he's going to have, again, it's all about plate appearances and he brings quality along with quantity. You have Gunnar Henderson, who's going to be batting fifth. I think moving up the lineup is within the realm of possibilities there. It's just a matter of letting him get going. And Stowers factoring, it's going to be a mess there. So Vavra, as a lefty, has had a really good spring. They've been moving him all around the field. I think he's going to have a super util type of role. And I think he plays a solid maybe 2 to 3 games a week. But Stowers, I do think, opens up the year as a strong side platoon at DH and fourth outfield type. But if Vavra took that role, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Vavra's been really, really strong, really solid. Ramon Urias, same idea. He's going to play some third base, some second base. But he's a righty, probably gets the weak side platoon there at second base with Frazier while factoring in on occasion. But one injury and he's in more so than not. Mateo, one trick pony, he's going to run. And his glove was so good in shortstop last year, it's going to keep him in the lineup. So I think Mateo ends up being better than we might have expected because of playing time, not because of his actual performance. I think the glove will hold him in there, but if the glove fails, he's not going to stay. His bat is not good enough to keep him in that lineup. So it's all if that defense with the shift rules, again, the shift rules really benefit a guy with really good defense. So if that defense comes back this year, as good as it was last year, Mateo will play most days at short. But just know they have Gunnar Henderson, who can play shortstop, Ramon Urias for third base, Vavra for third base. They have options. So if Mateo is really that bad with the bat, which he can be, probably will be, I wouldn't have got his draft price was way too high this year. As Agent Muldaur. Okay, I got you, man. Refer to me as Agent Muldaur. I hope I said that right. I will. Agent Muldaur. I like it. All right. Let's move on to the another fun team, the Rays, which are like the Giants are like the Rays of the NL, but the Rays are the originators of all this chaos, and they actually don't have any platoons according to this thing. I don't buy it. Yandy Diaz will lead off and play first base, I think, and he'll factor into third base, but I think they're going to see what they have there at Isak Paredes. Isak Paredes had like a 700 OPS against righties last year with like a 100 WRC plus. He was serviceable. I think we see him play plenty. With that said, I don't think the leash will be all that long because they have a guy in Curtis Meade who can come up and put third base, top prospect, really strong bat. I think he can handle it. So Paredes, Paredes was a top prospect in his own right. He can crush lefties. I think he'll play. I see the leash being long, but Meade shouldn't be down too long. I don't know when they gain that extra year of eligibility on Meade, but if Paredes gets hurt or struggles mightily, they probably will plug it with Tyler Walls, who they shouldn't, but they probably will. And but Paredes is very interesting there. But let's go from top to bottom. Top four in the lineup should be in some form or fashion this against righties most days. I say against righties because Lowe will sit against tough lefties, maybe move down a little bit. Ramirez, so this is what I was thinking about. They have five righties here. Siri, Bethencourt, who's a catcher, and obviously they have Mejia, who's a switch hitter. They could platoon easily. But Paredes and Margot and Ramirez. Something's got to give because I don't think they kept Josh Lowe up to not play him. And he's a lefty. Look at these four straight righties. You're going to tell me they're not going to get a lefty bat in there most days. Luke Raley had a really strong spring. I think that he could platoon and factor in. Harold Ramirez deserves a shot at a full-time role again, but he entered the year last year, if memory serves, as a weak side platoon bat. So Ramirez, if he started off in that role again, wouldn't surprise me. And I don't think you mess around with Margot. I think Jason Klett made a very good comment about how Siri, Thompson on Twitter, Siri's defense should keep him in there most days. Sure, does that mean Margot isn't guaranteed everyday role? But Ramirez, Lowe is going to play is what I'm getting at. Lefty bat, they need a lefty bat in the bottom half of that order. And Lowe had an option. So it's not like they couldn't send him down. I don't think you keep Lowe up as a fourth outfield / bench bat. I'm harping on that because he didn't exactly earn his way up either. So I don't understand why they kept him. I know there's a squeeze everywhere. This team's always squeezing for players and playing time because they have so many options. It's always a headache with them. I am not an X-Files fan. No, not a big X-Files fan. I apologize. So if someone else caught that reference, feel free to laugh at me because I did not catch the reference. But yeah, so this team, that's the fallout I see there. Stud, really strong, solid corner infield type. Huge upside, power, and elsewhere. Good, really big. He has like 10 stolen bases this spring. Siri's a huge stolen base guy. But something's got to give here for playing time for Lowe. I believe that. If they kept Lowe, something's got to give there. Instead of harping on it, let's move on to the Red Sox. This was surprising. They sent down Bobby Dalbec and Jorge Alfaro, both of which I expected to at least be bench spots. Instead, they filled those bench spots with Yu Chang, who can also play the infield role pretty well, and Connor Wong, who obviously a backup catcher. So those are the guys there that will play a bunch in terms of like backup role. But to start the year, Enrique Hernandez batting ninth should happen against righties. They did mention him and Arroyo as leading off against lefties as the righty bats. Casas batting sixth. Looks likely with Verdugo starting off the year, getting the first shot at leading off, but both names were mentioned. So both names should factor, but I think Verdugo gets the first shot if those last few lineups in spring were any indication, but seeing those guys flip-flop wouldn't be a surprise, especially if Verdugo starts off slow. Turner, middle lineup, Masataka Yoshida could also factor into the top of lineup, but they seem intent on keeping him as a middle lineup bat. Same with Duvall, not with the lineup spot, not with the leading off part, but the middle lineup spot. And he's going to get a bunch of run. It's going to take an injury to see, Jaren Duran get some regular run there. Reese McGuire, second catcher type, but very, very limited in terms of potential. Arroyo, I wonder how long the playing time is going to be there, because with Adalberto Mondesi set to return, you should see probably Enrique Hernandez move to second base. Arroyo gets put back into a util type and Chang gets sent down or gets cut or something happens there. Because there's no room for all of them. Because Arroyo has no options. Chang has no option. But we'll see what happens. Ref Snyder, we saw him platoon last year. That's pretty much all his role is. But yeah, so we got here. So just know, Enrique Hernandez, play appearances aren't going to be great. My family's home. So if there's some background noise, I apologize in advance. What should we do tomorrow is a good question. Watch this all over if you didn't catch it the first time around. And you're going to hear kids in the background. Don't mind me. I'm live streaming. Go. Lock those. That's, I had to tell me, I caught it. I muted it. I apologize. my kids. But anyway, so we have the DJ LeMahieu leading off. I think that's going to happen. Volpe did break camp with the team, and he did say he's going to bat ninth. So that's happening. Volpe's playing every day. They sent down Peraza. Peraza is optioned. I apologize. I'm losing my train of thought here. I don't believe in this. I don't agree with this. Why is Oswaldo Cabrera down here? I think Cabrera plays every day over the likes of Hicks. I know that they love Hicks there for some reason, but Hicks is I don't see Hicks playing every day. I see Oswaldo Cabrera playing every day. But that's just me. Maybe it's my bias there. IKF is going to be utility. When Bader returns, there is going to be a squeeze for playing time in the outfield. That much I do know. But Stanton's not going to play every day in right field. LeMahieu's not going to play every day at DH. LeMahieu's going to factor all over the field. He's going to DH. He's going to first base, second base, third base. Donaldson's going to get regular rest. You're going to see Torres get regular days off. You're going to see Rizzo definitely get regular days off. And that's why LeMahieu's going to play a lot. But there's going to be – everyone's going to get regular days off. You're going to have Cabrera playing the outfield to start the year most days and play third base like he did last year and like we see in spring. So I like Cabrera a lot. I like Torres. I think Torres is being slept on because of these other middle infield types, but Torres is a guy with a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. He'll never put up 2019 numbers again in terms of power, but people don't realize – maybe don't realize how good he was last year. So Torres is a guy – expect good things, even batting, and he's batting fifth in this lineup. It's a really solid roster spot here. Somebody mentioned, Robert mentioned I disconnected. No. You disconnected. Lefties? I'm guessing you meant the Rays. Rays against lefties, I'm expecting, I'll go back real quick. The Rays against lefties, I'm expecting, I expect this type of lineup against lefties for sure for the Rays. But against righties, I think Lowe plays most days. They didn't keep him up for no reason. But the lineup you're seeing here with Paredes, Siri, Margot, a righty-heavy split here. So back to the Yankees. I think that's everything. But Oswaldo Cabrera is a guy I really like. I wanted to make sure I hit that home, hit the nail on the head on that one. Rizzo, yeah, so this is what you should expect the lineup to look like probably too with LeMahieu leading off, Judge, Rizzo, Stanton, Torres. I really do think that's going to happen. Then kind of fill in the blanks here at the end. This rotation's a mess right now. And we're not even talking rotations today, so we're going to skip ahead, but that rotation is absolutely horrendous in terms of just, like, compare what it should be. So you have this team, write it in pen, man. It's been like this all spring. Kwan, Rosario, J-Ram, Josh Bell, Naylor. I love Naylor this year. I do think he will platoon at times. I don't think it's like a full set platoon, but he's going to platoon. Same thing with Andrés Giménez. He's going to not play against every single righty. Or lefty, but you have guys like Will Brennan, very solid bat on the bench. He needs an injury, though. This team is so full. He needs an injury for a regular role. But Brennan, very good bat-to-ball skills, power, speed, combination, guy that you really want to have your eye on your watch list or stashed in deeper formats. Gabriel Arias, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that. I apologize. But he's going to factor into that utility role. Think Owen Miller. Think a guy that can play second base, third base, probably some – he played some outfield this spring, too. I think he's a good guy for DCs. So, like, if you have him late in draft champions leagues, which are draft and hold leagues where there's 750 players drafted, he's a perfect guy to have there because he's going to play, but sporadically. And an injury, he's kind of like, if J-Ram goes down again, he's that guy that's going to fill in for J-Ram, I think. So keep that. And you meant Red Sox. Okay, even better. So let's go back to the Red Sox real quick. Sorry. So we're going to talk about Red Sox against lefties before we move on here to the, before we move back to the Central. So against lefties, Enrique Hernandez and Arroyo will lead off. I'm sorry, I have to look at the roster now because I'm just kind of running on fumes at this as we get through these teams. So the Royals, Bobby Witt, Melendez, 1-2. We've seen it all spring. That should continue. Sal Perez, Vinny P, top four for sure. Dozier, probably the five spot. Now, this is where it gets interesting because against lefties, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. and Framil Reyes made the team. They value defense apparently in the outfield from what I've talked to some of those few Royals fans that exist. Jackie Bradley Jr. will play the field, but Framil Reyes will at least be a weak side platoon bat. He had a pretty decent spring, but it's still Framil Reyes. He is 27 years old, big power upside, about a year or so removed from a good year. So to say he's completely toast could be a little premature, but at the end of the day, he is nothing more than an AL only type of name. But Framil Reyes, if he has a strong start or gets some playing time that we don't maybe foresee happening, could be an interesting spec for power. Jackie Bradley Jr. is not good. Nicky Lopez is not good for fantasy purposes. These guys will factor in as defensive replacements and help on defense and be just some depth. Matt Duffy, the fact that he's going to platoon, I mean, I wouldn't put anything past this team, but it's a terrible,
terrible idea. Michael Massey's interesting. A little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. He flashed it as well when he came up last year. So I think he could be a solid little middle infield option. He's been going late in drafts as a middle infielder. I think there is some upside there. Edward Olivares is finally freed because it's always been like a free Edward Olivares. And he learned his way to and from AAA and back quite a bit. He learned that route, I should say. So hopefully we see the best of him. Kyle Isbell, defensively, they're going to give him a shot to play in center field. And they're going to give him every chance to run with it. But Drew Waters will return from his oblique. And then I think Drew Waters gets that spot back. So Isbell could be a short-term thing, or it could turn into Olivares, Isbell, platoon. This team beyond the top five will mix and match these. I think Massey will play more times than not, though. So I think Massey's rather safe. Eaton, speed first type of guy, kind of a one category type. He can give you some batting average, but it's really speed or bust with Eaton. Okay. Just make sure I didn't miss any questions. Let's move on to where we at. Oh, up here. The Tigers, Nick Matone leading off. I can honestly see that. They've been showing us Carpenter leading off. They've been showing us Beerling leading off, but Matone's been getting the most leadoff run, and he should gain third base eligibility, which is very helpful. He's having a good spring, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. He could go 10-10 type of thing, and where you're getting him, or he's not even going draft in most places, he could have some little sneaky fantasy appeal in a pinch, especially in deeper formats. Torkelson has my attention, mostly because he had a mental health coach he hired this offseason. He's been hitting the cover off the ball. Let's see if that can finally convert into production at the big league level. He's still only 23 years old. Miguel Cabrera probably will play more than we hope, because guys like Vierling, I'd rather see. Guys like Carpenter, I'd rather see. But if this holds true, which probably does, Carpenter, Vierling, I think Vierling enters the year as a strong, as a weak side platoon bat for these guys, for one of these guys. But he's having a good spring too, and he could factor in as a regular more sooner than later. Riley Green was a guy I'm interested in because I drafted him last night as well, but more so because he's another guy that if he could just elevate the ball more, I think there's big things. And he's another guy that we've seen 7 extra base hits out of 16. So, and he's having a really good spring, 4 home runs, 1 stolen base. So he's showing the power and speed a little bit. I think we see that year from him, that 2010 type of year, bats 260-ish. I could see all that happening. I really like Riley Green this year. And I say 20 home runs, I think there's room for more, but that ballpark, even with the dimensions changed, I think Riley Green could still be hindered by it because it's still a big ballpark. Javier Baez, will he bounce back is the big question. He's going so late in drafts that you can get him as a middle infielder. There's a little risk there, but Baez did play through injury last year, and he had a decent finish to the year. A Baez bounce back, if he went 2010, shouldn't surprise anybody. Problem is he might hit 230 in the process. Scope plays every day. If you're looking for play appearances, that's a guy to know. But Matone, I like him deep, deep, deep league sleeper because he's going to gain third base eligibility and he's going to play probably almost every day. The Phillies are probably wishing they had Vierling and Matone right about now. Poor Phillies. Twins. We talked about Larnach a little bit, but we'll talk about it again. Larnach should start the year with a rather regular role. You have Buxton starting the year injured. DHing. You have Polanco on the IL, Kirilloff on the IL. Gallo will play first base and gain eligibility there. Let me pull up the Twins lineup, because I know he's been hitting towards the top of the lineup, but I think it's going to move around. Versus lefties, he obviously won't hit at the top, but he could. Like, leading off is not out of the question. Look, you've seen Gallo leading off a lot, and he led off recently there, and this was with a look at this lineup. This was a full lineup against a righty, and he was leading off. So seeing him lead off with semi-full lineups, especially that lineup, that very last lineup that we saw here in spring, Gallo leading off isn't out of the realm of possibility against righties. Against lefties, he probably sits. But then you're like, for who? They don't really have outfield depth. Willy Castro? Like, they don't have the outfield depth right now to platoon these guys. So to start the year, I think Gallo would be the guy. Look at it. So I'm saying, like, the outfield depth is lacking. Willy Castro is their only outfielder projected beyond their bench. So Nick Gordon can play the outfield, but he's a lefty as well. So Gallo might have early run, but I think if anybody platoons it is Gallo, not Gordon and not Kepler. I think Kepler has a regular role. Could see Larnach also platoon. But Michael A. Taylor early in the year has a role. He's not flashy, but a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. Nick Gordon's my favorite. He should play as much as he can handle. And last year he played, I think, 6 or 7 positions. So Gordon's going to play almost full-time at bats anyway, regardless if he has second base to call home or not. So Nick Gordon's one of my favorites this year. And I just this whole time I've had this thing up. That's fine. I've had that up the whole time. Good thing it hasn't blocked anything. But yeah, Larnach, very, very good spring. Some power there. I'm pulling up his stats from spring. And that's what caught my attention, because Larnach has been a guy with some hype in the past. So if he can carry the spring over and the playing time, I mean, we're talking four home runs, 1,130 OPS, 350 batting average, not striking out much at all. Just a great spring training. Same thing, but a lot of teams are hitting great in spring. Miranda's having a good spring. Farmer had a big spring. Kepler had a big spring. Kepler's also walking almost as much as he's striking out, 4 to 5, a couple home runs. Caught stealing, so maybe there's some stolen base juice. Maybe he'll try. I doubt it, though. But yes, and I love this. I love this rotation. Fantasy, very friendly for drafts. And I think there's a lot of win potential here. So yes, this team, although injuries are hindering it, I think there's a lot of solid fantasy production and potential here. The White Sox, right? This team in Penn too. Everyone knows, if you know my content at all, you know I love Eloy Jimenez this year. I think he's in DH more now that they kept Colas. Oscar Colas should play right field more times than not. And that should keep, I mean, Jimenez is going to play the field, but just not as much as maybe we thought because of the whole, I want to play more outfield. And then he suffered a freaking calf cramp while playing the outfield. Like, no thanks. I'm not doing it. I'm like, but thank goodness. I think this is going to be the lineup. They mentioned Ben Tandy batting third. They like him there. Luis Robert is how you pronounce it. Luis Robert is how you pronounce it, I believe. Tim Anderson, like, yeah, this should be what we expect. Yoan Moncada, I mean, he's going to bat fifth or sixth in the lineup. It is what it is. I think that's a very solid spot. Vaughn comes into the year for the first time with a set role, knowing his position, getting a chance to be comfortable and playing a good first base. I think Vaughn's going to have that breakout year. He's just going to fall into place. He was a bat first prospect, and now he's not learning a new position. He's not being toyed with from La Russa. I think Vaughn gets everyday run and really takes off this. And then Elvis Andrews, he's going to gain second base eligibility. Know that. A little bit of power, a little bit of speed. And if you remember, crazy, crazy hot finish to start to finish the year last year. So a good bet to have as a middle infielder entering the year. And again, gains eligibility. With King Gallo hitting leadoff, unfortunately, Agent Maldar, if I'm probably saying it wrong, unfortunately, Fox, I think so, but it's because of the on-base skills. And obviously, you could whiff as much as you want, but he walks a ton, hits for power, and the shift band might help him hit 210 instead of 200. In terms of depth, Sheets probably comes the first guy up in terms of like playing the outfield first base. Grandal this offseason was actually very interesting. He took on a new conditioning approach to actually get into shape and play. So we'll see if, and help him stay healthy. So we'll see if that happens. Had a really strong spring last I looked, drafted him last night as well. So I am buying into that a little bit. Plus, I mean, a lot of power upside there. He still has it just because he's old as me. He doesn't have the power. Let's go Angels. Home stretch here. Five more teams. And this is another team that's kind of just easy to do. What you see is what you got. I am curious to see how they treat Jake Lamb and Rengifo. I think Rengifo is a weak side platoon. They even started Lamb over him yesterday with the news of, and Walsh is a short time. I think it's a migraine thing. So I think he's a short time injury thing. Ohapi is going to start. It's going to be on him to keep it because here's the thing. You have Matt Theis, no options. You have him with three. So when Max Stassi returns, he's going to demand a spot. He's going to still factor in as a catcher, even if it's a second catcher. Ohapi is the only one here with options. So it might be a short-term look for Ohapi, but we'll see. So just keep that in mind when you're drafting him or rostering him. Jake Lamb, to start the year, I believe he made the team, actually. It was with a report yesterday. So he could start off with a strong side platoon. Power, AL only, but very little, very, very little interest there. But yeah, Rengifo, terrible against righties last year. Was a bench bat for a reason. Got an opportunity. Crushes lefties, so we'll see him against lefties. Had like 800 OPS against them, but like a sub 7, like a 650 OPS or less against righties. Rengifo's being drafted as a starter most places. I wouldn't be looking to do that. I don't believe in it. But the rest of his lineup is as expected. Ward leading off. Renfro batting fifth. Rendon, as long as he's healthy, will clean up. This was the surprise. I didn't think Urshela would be starting at shortstop. I guess it's because I don't know if David Fletcher is going to be healthy, but yes. So Urshela gains an everyday role, which is nice. And they don't really have a better bat there anyway. So it's a matter of how the defense holds up there. But ultimately Urshela has some AL only appeal, some in a pinch in early leagues that you drafted. If you drafted him, you know, he's going to play, which is nice. And everyone loves Detmers. I have nothing to say about him right now. I mean, it is what it is. He's a good pitcher. I mean, I think he's going to break out, but yeah, we're not talking pitchers. We're going through the lineup here. Pena, Tucker, Bregman, Yordan, Abreu. I wish this would be the case. Something tells me Dusty's going to dusty this and move Tucker down, Pena down, and randomly insert some person here at second base. I don't know if Hensley has the second base job. If you look at the lineups, I don't know if they had any today. But we're gonna look at the lineups together. I'm gonna look at let's pull up the latest lineups for Houston and talk about this, because this caught my attention last night when I was writing my article, which you can check out on The Athletic, which has all this in written form, basically. But let's share this time. So if you look up Dubon, look where he's been playing to finish off the year. Second base. Second base with a main, and look, Tucker can't freaking bat second even in the lineup, it doesn't count. Tucker, that is just frustrating. Look, this lineup, this is the one that caught my attention. Yordan batting second, this one. So if, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Tucker batting fifth, because Dusty does not like to bat at the top of the lineup. I don't know what it is, and I'm basing it off of track record. I believe last year, even with all the injuries, Tucker still batted fifth like 84 times or something, some big number like that. So he likes Tucker in that 5-6 spot. He batted there last year, even with the injuries piling up, I think a total of like 118 of his starts, 120 of his starts, something like that. So batting fifth for Tucker isn't out of expectations, but also Tucker likes Dubon. He just does. I don't know why. I can't explain it, and he shouldn't. But Dubon, I think, gets the first crack at the second base spot over Hensley. It's stupid, but it is what it is, and our fantasy teams don't matter to them. So, but Myers, McCormick, and that's the thing. Durden can factor into this. Dubon can factor into all this, and so can Hensley. I think it's going to be a bunch of names in this bottom half here just moving around until they figure it out. And going back to the Tucker at five spot thing, they probably want to get another lefty down here anyway and not have to depend on these lefties. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see. But yes, Brantley, we know when he's healthy, he's slotting into the two spot. And obviously, Altuve will lead off. So then these guys definitely will slot back down to the bottom half when everyone's healthy. But yeah, dude, I wanted to bring up that Dubon thing. I keep doing this whole showing off. That's what I'm talking about here, right here. So right here, there's a whole bunch of righties. I can see Tucker batting fifth because they might want to get a lefty lower in the lineup, then go righty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty. I could see that happening to start the year just to give them some, not have to give them six straight righties to turn over a lineup, because you have five here and then the leadoff man being a righty. They have other lefties up. But yeah, like I said, Durden, all these guys here, Hensley, Dubon, they're all Jake Myers. All this will, they'll all factor in. It's going to be a mess. And you'll have some Matijevic, I can't say. You'll have him factor into the mess as well. It's just a lot of mess and a lot of frustration to deal with here early on for the Astros. Athletics, what everyone was waiting for. There's actually a lot of intrigue here for me, in my opinion. You have Tony Kemp leading off. Yes, Estuary Ruiz batting ninth should happen. I think he's a one category, possibly two, depending on batting average, but a one category producer. Shea Langeliers is going to gain catcher eligibility right away. So if you draft him for, he'll have Utah only in NFBC formats, just know it's going to be 2 weeks and then he'll be your catcher too. So make a plan for that. Nick Allen and Aledmys Diaz, I guess Diaz could bat second. I'm not surprised it's the A's, anything can happen. I'm surprised Laureano doesn't, but we'll see. Diaz could bat second, and it's going to be some weird platoon mix between the two of them. It's a mess. I don't like that. But then Seth Brown, Aguilar, this Ryan Noda guy, I know he's a Rule 5 pick, but he has like a 40% strikeout rate in spring. He has huge power. So the guy can hit 45 bombs, but he can't hit the ball enough to do so is the problem. So the power isn't a question. It's the fact that he struck out like 28% in AAA last year. And in the pros, that's going to translate to like 35% probably. And I don't know how long they're going to give him run when you have a guy like Connor Capel, who's the complete opposite. Capel can play the outfield, will factor in as a fourth outfielder, but he is a lefty too. So if Noda struggles, they can move Aguilar to first base. They could put Seth Brown at first base, and Capel should be playing sooner than later. I really like Connor Capel this year. There's power, there's speed, there's a strong hit tool and strong play discipline. A lot to like from Connor Capel. No reason why he shouldn't be making this team and starting over the likes of a Ryan Noda. But Noda will get some run, and there's a lot of power upside, but man, I don't know how long it's going to last if he can't make contact. Nick Allen, like I mentioned, some weird platoon with Diaz, could just be seriously striking a weak side platoon, even though they're both righties. Other than that, yeah, I wanted to bring up Capel. And Laureano possibly batting sixth or seventh is actually very possible. He's been doing it all spring. So him not batting second over Diaz, although surprising, is possible. So just know that when you're factoring that into your projections, he should still hit for power and hit for and get some speed, but it's not going to be as it was. Plate appearances were part of the intrigue there, and they might not be as plentiful as we hoped for to start the year. Colton Wong's going to bat second, from my guesses. The last three or four lineups, it's been J-Rod leading off, Colton Wong batting second. And considering that it would let them go righty, lefty, righty, righty. And then I think they're going to put Cal Raleigh here to bat, you know, switch to lefty, righty, lefty, righty. So it gives them more lefty, righty, up and down lineup. But this is what you're seeing. Kelnick's going to get full run. Haggerty, I do expect him and Hummel to factor in versus lefties at the very least. But Hummel can play some catcher. So hopefully he could be a sneaky Blake Sable type. Because there's power, speed, he can play all over the field. Cooper Hummel is a poor man's Blake Sable. So if you're interested, I have a few shares. If you're interested in Hummel, that's going to be intriguing. Haggerty, Crawford's dealing with injury, but Haggerty played some shortstop, second base. I think first base is the spring. Third, I don't know if he played third base this spring, but he played outfield. My point is Haggerty's getting the full Dylan Moore treatment. What that means is Haggerty, as long as Dylan Moore's out, could play enough between weak side platoon, rest days, etc., to gain eligibility elsewhere. There's some speed there, some power, some interesting skill set if the playing time is there. I don't think it's going to be there right away, but it could be there if there's an injury or if any injuries linger. So Haggerty's a name I have circled, and Hummel as well, because again, if Hummel can gain that catcher eligibility, that's huge. And then, but yeah, so that's going to be the lineup there. Nothing really. It's kind of cut and dry. Adrian Pollock's going to bat towards the bottom of the lineup and have some playing time there. And the Rangers are another team. Very, very, you know what you're getting. Robbie Grossman's being slept on. I know he's not great, but he's going to play every day. There's a little, like, you know, power speed. We know he has a little bit of both. And bottom of the lineup, they're going to have to manufacture runs. He will be running. Bubba Thompson is a short-term stolen base guy, because as soon as Leody Tavares is ready to come back, that's Tavares' spot, in my opinion. You have really good bench options in Josh Smith and Ezekiel Duran, both of which will factor for rest days, platoons, etc. I don't think Brad Miller is going to DH regularly. I think what they started doing was kind of everyone. I think Garver's going to get more DH at-bats, even against righties. And then Garver's going to gain catcher eligibility because he has been catching in the spring, showing he's healthy. I think it's Heim's job. I think Heim is the catcher. I think Garver's going to be the second catcher, get eligibility. And look, they don't have another option. So he's going to be the second catcher. He's going to gain eligibility. And that alone warrants freezing the roster room as a second catcher. But in one catcher leagues, I don't think he's going to be good enough to be a top 12, top 10 guy. So I would just keep him on the watch list and go from there. Grossman will play. I really like Josh Young. I'm a real big fan of his. I think there's some fun power upside there. He was a top prospect. Shoulder injury hindered his rookie season. He barely played. And when he did play, he didn't look great. Spring's been really good to him. We're seeing some of that prospect shine and pedigree, or some of that prospect pedigree shine through. I do think Josh Young could be a sneaky sleeper that people just kind of move on fast from prospects. You know what I mean? Oh, and real quick, talking about Kelnick, it is what it is. The tools are flashy. He's having a huge spring. Nobody's arguing the big spring. It's the fact that the power and speed isn't the question. The strikeouts are. He wasn't striking out a bunch this spring, but he never struck out a lot against minor league pitching. So early on, we're looking at the strikeout rate for Kelnick. But hopefully the strong spring can carry itself over into the regular season there. And now time to talk about my main event drafts. Load those up. So we talked about all 30 teams. I am tired, but we're going to talk about my main event because I promised this. So it's a long episode, but it's going to be a fun one. So I guess we're going to have to just, I don't know which one. I can't share the whole screen. Oh, this is annoying. Okay, so we're going to share this tab. So this is my team. I was trying to think of how to do this because I have both pulled up round by, we'll do round by round and overall team at the end. We'll share this tab. So this is my round. So I picked second, right? I wanted to give it in a way that wasn't just colors. I want to be able to go back and forth from team context and stuff. So I picked second. I took Acuna when he fell, easy power speed all the way around. Like that was like, I think he's going to be an MVP finalist this year. In the main events, pitching gets pushed up. And for those who don't know what a main event is, it's a big league 15 teamer. You're 5x5 roto. There is free agency via FAB, but there are no trades. So you draft your team. You try to build the most complete team. Obviously, there's an overall aspect as well. I say obviously as if those listening expect I know this, but ultimately that's the deal here. So I tried building the most complete and overall team here. Tried to hit on everything while simultaneously, trying to project forward on some of these players. So obviously Acuna was an easy pick. Woodruff, Gausman. I double tap pitching here. Pitching gets way pushed up in these formats. So I passed on Devers in the third round, actually, to get Gausman. Maybe that's a mistake, but again, I trust my process. And I thought, I thought it was worth mentioning. In this league, again, what I just did, you saw the content, if those are still watching, the content I just did was what I do all season long. So hitting is what I keep on top of. I'm really keen on hitters. I wanted to go pitching heavy. So I took Darvish in the third as my third SP and a 15-teamer that's really strong. I was going to take Eloy here. Eloy Jimenez, he's my guy. He fell here, but so did Cedric Mullins. I look at Cedric Mullins. I have him ranked higher than Eloy. I was like, okay, so with Ronald Acuna Jr., you have Cedric Mullins and Acuna. You're getting speed. You're getting some power. He's not zero. You're getting more runs. I'm securing runs, which are hard to stream. I'm securing stolen bases, which I think everyone thinks stolen bases are going to be up, but that might not happen. I mean, that might happen, but it might happen for the good players. So more than just these random crappy players. So I didn't mind securing speed. Now I'm like, okay, cool. Now I know I need power. Willy Adames comes around. That's a 30 home run bat. We saw it happen before. He's not a zero for power. But again, now I know I have batting average issues. So I'm looking at Acuna, I'm looking at Cedric Mullins, I'm looking at Willy Adames. I'm like, got some batting average question marks here. However, I addressed power. I know I have runs. Adames has some RBI upside. I know he bats like second in the lineup, so that the RBIs are minimal. So I'm like, all right, cool. I know I need some power. I still need more pop. I know Acuna's not zero for pop. Acuna can hit 32. He's going to hit 30 home runs probably as well. But you get my point. Like, I want power is going to fly off boards faster than speed. However, I didn't want to leave this area without a closer. Clay Holmes fell to me in a spot I did not expect him to. 92nd overall. That was a little higher than most of where he was going. So Clay Holmes is my first closer. I really like Clay Holmes this year. I think he's going to be a top five closer, and you're getting him outside, like closer to like the 10th ranked closer. Sean Murphy. And of course, with all the injuries popping up for a closer, Hendricks, Edwin Diaz, it made closers go up, and somehow he fell anyway. And then of course I waited till pick 120. It's a two catcher format. So Sean Murphy was there, and he was he was the end of a tier. I did not want to leave my draft without a top 10 to 12 catcher. And I got one. And then, of course, to pile on pitching, because, again, I remember I told you pitching was something I wanted to focus on. I took Jesus Luzardo. So now I have four guys I value, and I'm big on Jesus Luzardo. And I wanted upside. I have a very, very safe floor in Woodruff, Gausman, Darvish. So I wanted to get a very safe – I wanted to take my upside pick, my breakout pick, a guy who has legitimate top 20 starting pitcher upside that you're getting outside the top 20, and Luzardo. He probably top 15 upside, I would say, but it's all about health. Regardless, I got Luzardo as my SP4. I felt great about that. And I'm like, all right, cool. Now it's time to start smacking some hitting. I got another guy I told you I believed in, Jonathan India. Stolen bases, batting average, Great American ballpark. He's going to play. And that's kind of what you want. And you want that ballpark. You want to attack that ballpark. And you want power. He's not a zero for power either. But again, now I know I have realized, I'm like, oh, here I go. I have no home runs. I'm lacking power. I'm lacking RBI. So I decided to approach that a little bit with Matt Chapman. Now batting sixth, seventh in the lineup. The RBIs won't be as good as I would like. However, I addressed power and I addressed RBI. However, batting average might be a concern again. I'm hoping that the shift rules and the – I know he's a righty, but maybe the shift rules, I'm just hopeful. And then the new park factors in that field can help with the power and maybe some BABIP lucky hits much more off the wall. Closers got pushed up. I jumped ADP by like 60 picks for Carlos Estevez, because I believe he's going to close and get me 20 plus saves. And I wanted a solid second closer. I didn't want to play that closer waiting game. So I have two closers now. I have four starting pitchers, and I have to build my offense. And now I have to go to my strength, right? So now I got a guy that I think hit 20 to 25 home runs. He could hit 30, but I'm not banking on it. I'd say 20 to 25 and get you like 80 plus RBIs. That's Josh Naylor. I know he will platoon at times, or maybe platoon full time. I don't care. 550 play appearances is still within an easy full time strong side platoon guy. I think that there's some serious power upside there. I like him. Laureano, not a huge Laureano guy, but I liked where he was going, and more power, more speed. He should be decent batting average. It's the RBIs that are going to be lackluster. So I think one thing I realized real quick here is I'm going to struggle with RBI, and that's going to be frustrating to try. It's hard to make that up. So RBIs are going to be a pain. I'm going to have to try to find a middle of the lineup guy. Josh Young, if he's batting fifth, like I expect him to, that can help me make it up. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. also wanted some batting average help here. So batting average help, and he's batting third. So there goes, again, I'm gaining some RBI help here. Lourdes Gurriel batting third all year. If he stays healthy, that's probably 80 plus RBIs as well. Josh Young batting fifth in a good Texas lineup, at least the top half. Could be another 80 plus RBIs. So I'm not exactly, it's not weak. I'm not strong there. Nick Gordon batting towards the bottom of the lineup. More power, a little pop, a little bit of speed, but he's just going to be whatever. Oswaldo Cabrera, same idea, a little power, a little speed, batting towards the bottom third line, but it's Yankee Stadium. So Will Benson, power speed as well. See, now we're in the reserve rounds. Sonny Gray was my SP5. I really like that. Upside, huge, a lot of upside there. We know the health is a question, but you shouldn't be worried about where he's going, because where he's going, I like taking a shot there. Justin Steele, another guy I like, and Pepio, another guy I like. I wanted to stream pitchers off my bench. I went into the idea of like, I'm going to stream pitchers off my bench so I don't have to play stream. Because again, pitching is my weakness. I wanted to address my weakness. And that's why I went with But then before Will Benson made the team, I took a shot on him. We're talking about big upside here, power and speed. I really was happy there. Brad Boxberger was just this. I'm to not take a zero week one in pitching, because week one for these formats, four games, not every starter is going to play. So I really wanted to see, not only will he get, maybe he factors into the closer role I know Fulmer's the favorite, but you never know. That's all that was. He'll be a drop sooner than later, more than likely. Brian Bayo, another guy. I'm that's my stash. I decided to stash Bayo upside, and I have a week or two to play with in terms of having enough pitchers to stream. Kyle Gibson starts against the Red Sox. I don't know if I'm going to go there and try that, but it is an option week one. And Gibson is having a decent spring and says he feels better than he's felt in a while. I think it was something to do with his mechanics. Max Kepler, a my guy, and I expect him to bat fourth. So remember how I mentioned I'm a little weak on power, a little weak on RBI. I think Max Kepler is going to be a starter for me starting week one and as a util, and I'm going to try to capitalize on his batting, on his playing time and where he's hitting the lineup, and hope that the breakout I believe is there is going to be there. Same with Coop Campusano, is my second catcher. I already got rid of JD Davis, who's my Mr. Relevant, second to last pick of the draft. I ended up putting in for a $1 bid on Sal Frelick, which didn't work out because Frelick was then optioned the next day. So, and Matt Brash, another guy just to not take zeros week one, but also sneaky to factor into saves. I think Munoz is not going to be the main closer. I think he's going to be more of a multi-inning guy or a high leverage guy. That I think DePoto himself has said that, which leaves Matt Brash and Seawald. And I think Seawald is a favorite and will get most of the saves, but we also see this team likes to spread them out. I think Brash is also going to factor into the ninth. And because of that, I want Brash, and he's a guy that I will stash beyond 1 week, but he's also a guy that gets four games and I can plug him in over a starter that's questionable to play week one or a crappy streamer. So ultimately I like my team. I think it's very safe. I am scared that the home run RBI combination might be a little on the weak side, but I think I'm underestimating how many home runs I'll get, because I keep forgetting that Acuna is going to hit a good amount, Chapman's gonna hit a good amount, Naylor's gonna hit some. You have if I'm right about Kepler and Gurriel, there's some there, Cabrera. I just think RBIs might be an issue, and that sucks because RBIs are tough to stream, and that's where Eloy would have been perfect here. I really wish I took Eloy there in a sense, but same time, oh yeah, Domus is going to hit a good amount too. At the same time, I really value Mullins' skill set. So I probably should have attacked the middle rounds a little better with try to get more. I mean, Murphy's going to bat fourth, so that helps with RBI a little bit, but he's a catcher and he's only playing so many games. At the end of the day, I do like my team. I think it's going to be competitive, and I think I can address offense off the waiver wire enough to make up for some shortcomings in some spots. Oh, and of course I got Bryce Terang in the reserves, but that's more of a speed guy, batting average guy. Batting ninth, he's not going to help me where I need help from day one. But I it's going to take a little bit of work. And you're always going to be, here's the thing, in a 15 teamer, you're always going to be weak somewhere. And I decided to be weak. I guess without realizing it, RBI might be where I'm weak, but I think I took such an overall approach to it. So it's just I tried to build a quality, like just no real holes type of team. I'm hoping that by doing that, I can fill in the blanks and gain strengths off either A, like I said, Benson, Terang break out. Like I hope they can. Kepler is the sleeper I expect him to be. Gurriel breaks out like I think he can. I'm banking on one of those guys hitting, and if not, being able to utilize my skill set and understanding rosters to attack hitting off the waiver wire. That's where I'm going. I'm using my strengths, because again, a 15 teamer this deep of a league, you're going to be weak somewhere. Everyone has weaknesses somewhere. I made sure pitching wasn't, made sure closers weren't, and I made sure I had my speed and my other stuff capitalized. Like I said, batting average is a little bit random, but I think batting average, I'm not really too worried about it. I'm more worried about RBI, because that's just, Derek Hall was drafted. Nelson Cruz is available, but meh, like I'm not going that route. So it's like, you can see, like I'm already kind of like, my options are limited. I'm gonna have to wait for a guy to break out or hope that my guys hit. So hour and a half. I appreciate those who watched the whole way through. If not, I'm actually uploading this to a podcast. So appreciate you all listening. Appreciate you all watching. The YouTube video will be live in like an hour or so. So those who want to rewatch it, it'll be there. Appreciate it, and we will talk